Father King had been one of my role models as I had prepared for priesthood. I really have four role models, in which he was one, and I thought it would be a privilege to serve as his curate. Also would have been very comfortable because we could have lived in our place in High Siegen. But at any rate, Bishop Walter had wanted me to go off to Sioux Falls to be the headmaster of All Saints School, which I did. And that, I suppose, is really the end of our formal relationship with this parish, although we have continued to be very interested in the parish and followed it closely over the years since we've been gone, and since we do summer here, we've been particularly interested. I'm very interested right now because my canonical residence is in the Diocese of Louisiana, and your new rector is coming from the Diocese of Louisiana. I knew him when we were there, and I had supplied in his parish in Denham Springs when he was away, and which is a suburb of Baton Rouge, and I'd been associated with him there. And so I'm looking forward with great anticipation and excitement as Father David prepares to come to Emmanuel.
Have you had a parish?
I've never had a parish. And we say it in the Shoulder House that we train priests for parish ministry. And that has not been my lot. I've always had a concurrent relationship with a parish, but not been a parish priest. During the 2 years we were in Sioux Falls, I cared for a small church in Laverne, Minnesota, Holy Trinity Laverne, which had at one time been a parish, but could no longer afford a full-time priest. So I took services there on Sundays and did some pastoral care during the 2 years we were in Sioux Falls, from 1972 to 1974. In the spring of 1974, I was called to Baton Rouge to be the chairman of the Department of Religion and chaplain at Episcopal High School, a sizable high school in Baton Rouge, and we were there for 9 years. We left in 1983 when I went to New York to the national headquarters staff. I served there for 4 years, and now I'm just leaving to go off to Neshota House. While we were in Baton Rouge, I had an association with St. Luke's Parish in that city, and during the time we've been in New York, I've served at Christ Church in Manhasset.
Why are you still wearing Louisiana license plates?
Do we have to and turn off the tape?
When we first came to this parish in 1960, it was about the time that Mr. Pipes was preparing to retire. I don't have any strong recollections of things that were going on during that time. My recollections really begin with Hanford King. He had a lot of energy, and lots of exciting things were starting to happen here. And I believe some people thought they were happening too fast, some of the older persons, but the younger persons in the parish, those with children, were delighted with Father King's ministry coming along. The church school started to grow. Adult interest seemed to increase. I can remember Sunday after Sunday after Sunday that if you were not in that church by 9 o'clock for the 9:30 service to begin, then you would have to sit in this auditorium, which was also pretty full, and just listen on a loudspeaker. We didn't have video cameras then. If it happened today, I guess we could have a videotape of the service going on. But there was just lots of excitement in the parish. The women's guilds were very active. The men's groups were active. There was great participation in the Every Member Canvas. And this was really due to Hank King's leadership, I believe. He really did energize the parish.
In the process of my researches on the history, somebody made the statement that Father King abolished all the guilds except the CW and the Altar Guild, because there was a multitude of guilds.
Oh, there were. But I mean, they were all very active.
There's still, like, St. Anne's Guild still exists.
I don't believe that was the case, because Nancy was a member of St. Margaret's Guild. There was Dorcas Guild, St. Anne's Guild.
There were a bunch.
The one thing that I remember...
And Hank would come along to our St. Margaret's meetings.
I know that he did. Yeah. The one thing that I remember is that Helen King did not join any guild other than the Altar Guild. She did not think it proper that she be associated
with any one
particular one. Now, I don't know if Episcopal Church women existed before Father King came, but he did insist that they meet on a regular basis, so the guilds would come together commonly within that group. But I really don't believe that's correct, that he disbanded the guilds.
No. He's certainly, my time here, he was very supportive of all the different guilds.
Now, after he left, the guilds, I believe, started to fade. And we weren't here then, so I don't know why, but I can certainly speculate that part of it might be because women started to work more and did not have the time. During the time we were here, not as many women worked.
Not only that, they started getting old and dying, too.
Well, St. Margaret's Guild was a pretty young group of gals.
We've had a very...
Yeah.
Do you want to stop it a minute? I just want to...
I do, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Father, tell us of the... Describe how your vocation developed, and say as early as 7 years old, you felt this tug, and apparently it was a late blooming type thing.
Well, it was late blooming in that, let's see, I guess I was in... my students at Episcopal High School used to ask me about this a lot. They're very curious as to how one enters the ministry. I've never heard any voices or seen any lights or been struck in any dramatic way, but there has just been a gentle, constant tug in that direction most of my life.
From the age seven?
I would say from the age seven. I was in a boys' choir in Davenport, Iowa, and one of my role models there was the dean of the cathedral. And I liked being in church. I liked to sing. I liked the liturgy, the incense that we had there. I thought it was just glorious. The clergy were wonderful with us when we were small. They'd play softball with us and wrestle with us, and it was glorious. And I thought, gee, this would be a wonderful way to spend one's life. And that continued even when I was an undergraduate at Iowa. I just would never miss church. And it may have been it's more of a duty than anything else, but that was one thing I always did. I got to church, and as I had said earlier, the one mature thing about me was that I knew I was too immature to go to seminary. And so it just sort of laid on the back burner, but it would not go away. Mm-hmm. And while we were in New Guinea, it just became very clear. And I think Nancy, if she had had any reservations about it, became clear to her, too, that maybe that was the direction in which I should go. So we very enthusiastically went off to Neshota House in the fall of 1969, and we were just certain that we were doing the right thing.
Now I would like to interview Nancy, if you will, closer to the speaker.
My goodness, I think David said it all.
I want to talk about you. Where were you born?
Pierre, South
Pierre,
Dakota.
I said that. Mm-hmm. Grew up there. When did you arrive in Rapid City or Hyceega?
Our cabin in Hyceega, my parents' cabin, was completed the year I was born, so that was 1938.
So are your parents are Pierians, are they?
Yes, they're both dead now, but they were originally from Pierre.
They were never out this parish.
No, No.
And you were studying nursing, that was interrupted by marriage, is that?
No, I just decided to change majors and went into public relations. And met David at the University of Iowa. We were married after graduation.
I see. What drove you into public relations?
I don't know. I was just more interested in that than nursing.
Did you stay with it?
Unless being the wife of a priest has something to do with it. Yes, I suppose so.
Well, that certainly is history worthy of recording.